Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Sorcerer's Dictionary. This is Dr. John Stamey, live from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, where it's raining like mad. And, excuse me, I don't think I have COVID, I just think I have a cough. And I have with me my sorcerer, the guy that keeps me straight and lets me know what's going on, none other than Jason McClendon. Jason, how are you doing? Don't you love being here in the rain in Myrtle Beach?
Hey, John. Yeah, it's lovely out.
It's wet as hell. Come on. You're trying to be not. Don't be politically correct. You don't have to be politically correct on Sorcerer's Dictionary. You can just be honest. It is wet. But that's okay. It's so good to have us, to have you here, and we're going to have a great podcast. We were talking in the green room there. You've got a gigantic and wonderful topic, and I've got kind of a small but interesting pop culture topic I wanted to bring up. And I was now, have you seen that Netflix show, The Witcher?
I've seen a couple episodes of it.
I think it's really good. I was actually very impressed. I was impressed with the gal that straightened up her back and the kid that was the bard. I was pretty impressed with them. I thought they were great. But anyway, the kind of older lady sorcerer made a statement, and I wanted to talk to you about it because I think it means a lot, and I think it says a great deal to what we're trying to do. She said that magic is organizing chaos. And I thought for a minute, and I said, that's a powerful statement. I'm going to write that down. And I want to talk with Jason about this on the show because I think she's got a, well, the writers of the show have an interesting take. I don't believe they're talking about chaos magic. But what I believe they're talking about is that if you can control a situation that is a little bit squirrely and is a little bit chaotic, then that is magic. You don't have to create a portal. You don't have to do anything weird. But if you can control a situation, that is one real element of magic. Now, do you agree with me, disagree with me? The floor is yours, kind sir.
All right. To a certain degree, it makes sense. Aleister Crowley actually said something similar, not quite the exact same thing, but along the same lines, and that's that magic is the art and science of causing change to occur in conformity with will. And by that definition, really, any act of impressing your will upon the world, whether that be opening a door or making a cup of coffee or anything, can be considered an act of magic. And when you boil it all down, it can be considered that. But I think that also distinctions, you know, there are a lot of distinctions that can be made in order to, you know, because, you know, there's a lot of the same things, or there's a lot of things that we call different names that run on the same principle. We can talk to a physicist or a doctor or another magician about the same things, but call them different names, because magic is the space in between. It's the formulation from unbeing into being. It is taking chaos and organizing it, and to put it in a deeper perspective, just on a more, I guess, cosmic level, but that would be a microcosmic sort of manifestation of that, taking a situation that is chaotic and making something out of it. Could be you. I would agree that that is a sort of manifestation of the same principle.
Well, I really like, I think, what he said. It is organizing chaos. It is walking into a situation, deciding, and I believe you have to decide if you really want to do it because, you know, not all situations are good situations or everything. But I think once you decide you want to do it, you must organize the chaos that is involved. The random chaos is, you know, as a computer scientist, chaos has a lot to do with randomness and just, pardon my grammar, crazy stuff happening. And I think that you can go in and you can, and I mean, I think Aleister Crowley, I think this is what he said. You can impose your will and create something that is, at least to you, better than what was there. I mean, there's no notion of qualitative, well, is it better for them? Is it better for you or whatever? There's no notion of who's it better for. I think, but what it is it has to do with, can you make a change? And, I mean, I think you and I are on the same page. You're on the same page with Aleister Crowley. I'm on the same page with the script writers of The Witcher. But I think they did a lot of research. I was fairly impressed with what they did, and I would just tell everybody to go watch The Witcher on Netflix. I think it's worthwhile. I learned a lot. But then again, Jason, I try to learn a lot from everything I see and do because we're only on this earth for a certain amount of time, and you better try to learn everything you can. Because you don't know when you're going to need it in the afterlife, do you?
I mean, yeah, you never know.
That's exactly right. All right, well, thank you for having this discussion with me. I appreciate it, and thank you for adding your insight and a little insight from Aleister Crowley. Now, you have a very interesting topic that you wanted to discuss. So I'm going to turn the floor back over to you, okay?
All right, great. Yeah, so I had been doing, I just wanted to talk a little bit about some of the stuff I've been looking into and a method of study that I had been employing with a certain book that I'm reading. The method of study, I call it contemplative study, but it's a way to kind of really get into the spirit of the text that you're studying and absorb it on a much deeper level. And the way that it typically works is to do the contemplative study, you would take a book that you're wanting to do the study on and, you know, make sure you have, it's a book that you want to spend the next several months on, but each chapter you'll go through, you'll read one chapter a week, and you'll choose seven sentences that you feel best express the message of that chapter. And, you know, it's best to go through and just get all the sentences that you can think of that are really good and then filter out the ones until you have the seven that you believe are the best for that chapter. And then once you have those seven sentences for the chapter that you read, you'll write those sentences down on note cards. And each day you'll look at one of those note cards. First thing in the morning, you'll look at your note card. And you'll put it, that note card, somewhere where you can see it often. And anytime you pass by it, you look at it and you read it and you think about it. On throughout the day, anytime it comes to your mind, you think about that card and you think about what the sentence on it and what it means and what it means in the deeper context of things. And then the next day comes, you get the next note card. You repeat the process. You think about it. You put it up where you can see it. You think about it throughout the day. Next day, repeat the process. You do that until you've gone through all seven note cards, and then you read the next chapter and you do the same thing. Find 7 sentences, write them down on note cards, hang them up where you can see them, and repeat every week. And then after the 5th week, after 5 chapters, you go back and you reread those first 5 chapters. And when you reread them, you already have a much deeper understanding from your contemplation on each of the sentences in each chapter that you've written down. Now everything begins to come together in a much more coherent and a much deeper and more profound way. And it really, it's a great way, especially of reading occult texts, because a lot of occult texts, they like to hide things in there. They like to be real secretive with how they word things. And doing this contemplative reading will really bring out a lot of those secrets and how to understand a lot of the, you know, the riddles and the parables and the analogies used in the text.
And, you see, now I'm going to stop. I need to stop you, and I need to put fault on the American higher education system. The colleges that have you read Shakespeare and have you read everything, they want you to read them as hard and as fast as you can, and they seem to think that you can understand them. Well, you can't. And what you're talking about is a brilliant way to understand, to really understand what you're doing. And I mean, as a guy that used to talk college for 20 years, I think this is absolutely excellent. Does it really help you understand the books that you're reading better?
Oh, absolutely. And there's so many layers to how that works too, besides just the contemplation, just the fact of going through each chapter and picking out sentences forces you to pay attention on a deeper level.
It's like you're supposed to read Macbeth this week, and then you're supposed to read Romeo and Juliet next week. You can't absorb that much great literature. Oh, and by the way, in 2 weeks, I expect you to have read Dante's Inferno. You can't do that. And it doesn't make sense, and I think the American higher education system, after our discussion tonight, could you please direct me to some literature about this type of study? Because I think it really makes a ton of sense coming from a guy that had to teach people programming. I think it's absolutely wonderful. So would you at least direct me to some of this literature that tells how to do it?
Oh, yeah, really, I learned this technique from just one book. It's a book by John Michael Greer called Learning Ritual Magic. It's a step-by-step process for learning and practicing with ritual magic from the Golden Dawn tradition. And it's got a lot of exercises and stuff like that.
The reason that's so funny is that sounds so non-academic, but it's absolutely on point to teach someone how to learn what they're reading about. So anyway, we'll talk about that more later. Deal?
Oh yeah, sounds good.
No, I think that's wonderful. All right. Please continue. I'm sorry, I'm always interrupting you.
Oh, you're good. You're good, John. You just do that until you've finished the book, and then Optional or not, you can reread the whole thing again or whatever with that deeper understanding. I haven't done that, but, it would just be like an extra kick if you have time to or you're interested in it. But, yes, it's definitely a very – it works. I've used it, and it brings a lot of stuff to light that you may not have even recognized was there before, because it forces you to pay attention. And I have been working. I've just recently got this new translation of a book written by the 15th century mage known as Cornelius Agrippa. He's a giant in the occult world. His three books were probably seen as the pinnacle of the peak of occult knowledge before the Enlightenment, and we sort of just kind of took a turn into the real mechanical, materialistic, sort of real atheistic and nihilistic view of things. He's very, very good. He wrote the book when he was 23 years old. He is a bit of a polymath. He had knowledge of all the natural sciences of the day. He had read Pliny the Elder, Albertus Magnus, Ficino, Pico de Mirandola, you know, and so many more. He was knowledgeable of all these natural philosophers and esoteric philosophers like Pythagoras and Plato. And he takes the knowledge, like him and a group of people. He didn't do it all by himself, but he was the primary sort of compiler of the text. But he took all of this ancient knowledge and theology, because he was a member of the Catholic Church, and he took all this ancient knowledge from the Bible, from all these different philosophers, from theologians, and he compiled them in this massive, and really for the time period it would even be considered massive because they didn't have a printing press at the time. Well, hold on. I'm not sure. They may have had the printing press. I'm not sure when that came about. This was in the 1500s. I'm not sure when the printing press started, but it was a massive book regardless, and a masterpiece of occult knowledge. And pre-published it, it leaked out and started spreading all throughout Europe. And he was like, well, we can't do this, you know, because he wasn't finished with it, but he had some, mixed feelings about some of the stuff. So he later republished it in 1533 after he went through and edited it and everything. And he believed that magic was the highest science, the highest and most sacred science. And he believed that it had been, by the time he had wrote this, he believed that magic had begun to get such a notorious reputation from the church and from, you know, folk practitioners in the villages and everything as superstitious and demonic. And he wanted to restore magic to its rightful place as the highest science. And he makes arguments that there is nothing unchristian about magic. And he really goes to great length.
And I'm going to tell you something.
Go ahead.
You talk about the fact that there is nothing unchristian about magic. Our new book is going to have a brand new essay about that very fact. And it is going to be groundbreaking. It's probably going to make some people mad. But you know what? I don't care. Because I have reconciled how magic works. I have reconciled how prayer works. I have reconciled who we pray to and how we pray to them. And it's just going to make people mad because they're not going to want to think it through. But you know what? That's okay. I'll keep my door locked to make sure that nobody comes in and gets me. And if they try to, I'll give you a call. Okay.
All right. Yeah. Don't want to make the Inquisition mad. No.
Well, I don't know, man. I thought the Inquisition was over, but apparently it might not be. But that's another conversation for another day, okay? Now, by the way, I wanted to ask you something directly on here. Would you like to have a member who is a very close friend of mine of the Knights Templar on here?
A member of the Knights Templar?
Yes.
Yeah, sure. I'm not too familiar with the Knights Templar. I mean, I know who they were and everything, but
well, I found out that one of my closest friends is a member of the Knights Templar. You know what he said? He said, "I'll come on your show, and I'll come to any events that you have, and I'll talk about it. I'll say all the public things that I can because a lot of people don't know about it." I said, "Well, I'll check with Jason." I never told him that I was going to check with you on the show, but that's okay. I'll see about having him on in 2 weeks because I think he was really excited about doing it, and I think the Knights Templar, they've got a lot of great history and a lot of great practices that they really can tell to people if the people are interested enough to ask the questions. And I know one thing. I'm interested enough to ask questions, and you are too, aren't you?
Yeah.
Excuse me. We're dying here. We're dying up here in Myrtle Beach. But anyway, all right, so I'll check with you and let you know, and we'll have my buddy Lee on here to talk about the Knights Templar. And I think it would be a great if we could extend what you're going to talk about this week to next week and then have Lee talk about the Knights Templar. I think that would be a phenomenal 3-week sequence of great conversations. I mean, this is what the Sorcerer's Dictionary is about. Don't you agree?
Yeah. Well,
it's exactly what we're about. And we're about talking about things that nobody else will. And that's what makes us different. That's why we have so many followers, I believe. And so by the way, shout out to all our followers. We love you to death, and thank you. Now, I'm sorry, I've interrupted like I always do. I always have to interrupt. So back to you, buddy.
Oh, no, you're good. I think I was actually getting to be a little bit on a tangent there, but it's all good.
Stop. Tangents like tangerines are great, okay?
All right. Got
it. That's the worst joke in the world, but it's the truth. I love tangerines. Okay.
Go ahead. Need to put a little, like, wah, wah sound effect or something on here. Anyway.
Pardon me? Okay, got you. All right, next.
Yeah. All right. Agrippa was actually he actually had the Inquisition come after him because of his 3 books that he released. I mean, he was able to get pardoned because, you know, he was in good with a lot of people and all that kind of stuff, and he was, you know, knowledgeable enough that he was able to explain his position on things. And they tried to get him, but if I'm not mistaken, he actually ended up having to go on the run because they came after him again before he died at the age of 42. But
well, let me ask you something. Don't you think it is ridiculous that, you know, he got away and the 2 men that did not get away are, and you ready for those names?
Yeah.
They will scare everybody. The 2 names of the 2 people that did not escape the torture of the Inquisition were Galileo and Copernicus. I mean, of all people, the center of the universe and Jupiter's 4 moons, and they were tortured. I mean, it's just unbelievable what our culture has done to people with knowledge. I mean, you and I better stay on the run and keep our addresses secret, Jason, is all I got to say.
Oh, I've got my own secrets. We'll you know, I'm selective of what I decide to share, but it's very, it sucks. But yeah, those whoever's in power, you know, if knowledge challenges their power, then yeah, it's they don't like that. But
I mean, look at Elon Musk being under such fire. Well, I mean, he's one of the most creative scientific minds in the world. He doesn't have a degree in science, but he is a creative scientific man, and he is creating some of the most powerful technology that we've ever had. people are mad at him. That's great. Congratulations, people. Show your small minds. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right.
That's all I got.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't really know much about Elon Musk, but from what I can tell, he seems to be a very driven and, you know, I think he's got good intentions for what he's doing and wants to really.
I'll say that I believe he takes unorganized entities and problems and forces organization on them. And so what is that? What did we describe that earlier?
We've got Elon Musk, the magician.
I think we do. So that's all right. We'll see if we can get him on here on the show. I mean, and you know what? It's real funny. I think he's quirky enough that if we talk to him enough, he might want to come on here. We'll see.
That'd be great.
Call, okay. I'll do the best I can on that one. I think it would be fun. But anyway, please continue with your great philosophers, because I don't know what else. Or great men, are they great men of learning, or are they great philosophers? What do we want to call them?
Well, we could call them wise men, philosophers. Really, as far as Agrippa, you know, called them wise men of old, magicians. But anyway,
just magician. Okay.
Yeah, he. But you know, he believed magic to be the highest science, and he wanted to reconcile it, you know, and show that it was not evil. And he went through great lengths to do this, and his learning is really reflected in the book, because he. He's always quoting from all these sources that he's read of all the great natural philosophers and the theologians, and he does a really good job at connecting the dots and putting them all together. But I've been reading, I'm so far doing the contemplative reading, I'm just in book one, which is the book of, the book is written in three parts. You know, he believed that there was a threefold world of the natural world, the celestial or mathematical world, and then the divine spiritual world. And the three books were respectively called the Book of Natural Magic, the Book of Celestial Magic, and then the Book of Ceremonial Magic, or On Theology and the Divine Ceremonies. And then each book builds upon the one before it and connects these three worlds together. And when I say three worlds, I'm pretty sure a lot of people listening already understand this, but I just want to make this clear. Anyways, these three worlds are not separate worlds. It's all the same world. That's just different layers of this world, layers of the unseen and the seen, being namely the natural world. But it's all the same world.
I wanted to ask you a question. From my experience, would that correspond to three different views of the same world?
Well, not necessarily three different views of the same world. It's just different aspects of the world. And, you know, if we were talking about, say, like the elements or something more modern that most people that study the natural sciences would be familiar with, the four phases of matter. And, you know, as matter heats up and transforms into these different states, or if it cools down, it, you know, transforms into a solid, and it all kind of like boils down to density. You know, the higher you go up the scale of heat, the density decreases, and there's expansion, and this sort of goes along the same principle. As if you think about in terms of density, the natural world is the most dense, then the celestial mathematical world is more is less dense. It's more abstract. It's not concrete. It has more to deal with abstract concepts, mathematics, logic, and the movements of the stars, which, you know, you could consider to be natural, but it's all intertwined as well. But it's just the different aspects of it, and that's predicting the stars and their movements and the constellations and everything, and how they affect, from an astrological standpoint, how they affect us here on Earth. And then the divine world are the intelligences and the highest divine. It's really based off of Plato's philosophy of ideas, the ideas being the purest forms of things, which are then distributed into more abstract ideas and complexity, which are then further distributed into material forms. And if you think about, like, say, from the perspective of the Big Bang, after the Big Bang, everything is the same material, but as the universe cools down and there becomes an imbalance in the matter and antimatter pairs, complexity arises from the transformation of the material as it cools down and expands. And so you got the highest source, which is one, and then even though we have many diverse forms in the material world, we all are ultimately connected with this divine source, God, you want to use that term, that's what Agrippa does, but we all ultimately come from that one source, and during the process of manifestation or creation, there is a further division and diversification of ideas and forms up until we get to the point we're at now in the physical universe. And whether you're looking at it from he's looking at it from more of a philosophical perspective, but also probably literal in some ways. But if you get into just the materialistic, just bare bones, materialistic, mechanical viewpoint of things, that philosophy also carries over into the whole idea of the Big Bang as the one source, and then the evolution of matter and form as things cool down and form greater density. And that's kind of, I guess, I kind of got on a tangent again there, but trying to just really think of how to explain the way that this viewpoint is, that it's not three separate worlds. It's all one world and these are the three. And really, it's more like a spectrum. It's not three set layers of this world. Those are just the most defined points in understanding the threefold world. But you could divide it to seven layers, 20 layers, however many layers you want. You can really detect the nuances in each layer. You know, you could theoretically make a division there, but it's been most practical throughout the ages to use the threefold division of the world in this manner.
Right, and I agree with that. I've seen it throughout time, you know, throughout the writings of many, many philosophers. And I think that we need to be mindful of that, number one. Number two, we can look at the way, okay, like here's an example. And I thought this was the coolest example in the world of how the Earth and how the universe was created in 7 days. Because if you think about the Big Bang set everything in motion at the speed of light. At that point, mm-hmm. there was no such thing as time. Time stood still. And as things slowed down, I mean, it might have taken quite a while for it to slow down to get to even day zero. So, you know, because time is something that man has created, it doesn't have anything to do with the divine or anything, I believe that we need to look at the fact, and I thought it was a great film. It was a Christian film, and they were trying to do everything they could to get people's attention that, you know, we're not crazy. And I think they're not. You know, in the first, you know, God created the heavens and the earth, first day. Well, you know, that first day might have been infinitely long, because it was nothing more, because, you know, everything was rushing at the speed of light. So that makes, in some way, to you look at it, it makes a lot of sense. Now, you know, there's no, I mean, everybody's got their strict opinions. Some people are mad about, well, it didn't happen that way, and some people are mad about the fact that it did, and they need to stop being mad, and they need to try to figure out, well, how did it really happen? And the fact that when the Big Bang happened, I mean, just everything split apart so fast. So, I mean, I think there's some grounds for people to try to understand what this really means, and not just say, well, it doesn't make any sense. Well, it does make sense, because time stood still when everything was moving at the speed of light. Now, I've never asked you this question, but do you understand what I'm saying? That first day could have been what we would call billions and billions of years. Does that make sense?
Right. No, it does. And
it's like you don't want to persecute people because they say something like, well, on the first day, whatever. Well, that first day may have taken forever. Well, it apparently did, and then came the second day, and it took forever as well. And then, comes, and I read about this week, the mistranslation of the Bible when they talk about man and woman in terms of Adam and Eve. The actual translation should have been men and women. It should have been multiple people. That changes everything. That's a game changer. So, I mean,
right.
You know, we need to relook at our texts. The texts that we have, they're wonderful, but we might have mistranslated them. So you've got to worry about that. I mean, it's like everybody wants to give me problems with believing the Book of Mormon. Well, I believe the Book of Mormon. Now, I'm going to tell you that. And we'll have to – I tell you what, Jason, we'll have another complete discussion about the Book of Mormon. Would that be okay?
That sounds interesting.
Well, it is, and I've got some friends that are Mormons, and I like them. And I like what they believe.
Yeah.
I think they need to – I think everybody needs to – what's the word? Everybody needs to kind of get together on everything, but I think it's very interesting. The Book of Mormon, in my opinion, is one of the most interesting books in the world. That's why it's called the Book of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I mean, what more can I say?
Yeah.
It's like, it's a powerful book, but people don't look at it, I don't believe, the right way. So if you're all right, we can ask those, I mean, because I think that's what the Sorcerer's Dictionary is about. I think we're into asking difficult questions and getting some kind of answer. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I can get on board with that.
I hope I didn't scare you.
No, I used to have some good friends that were Mormons too, and all. And I just want to, like, say something real quick. I don't know if you know about the controversy about Joseph Smith potentially possessing a Jupiter talisman. But, yeah, supposedly, and I don't know if it's true or not. It's just, you know, it's said by people that I'd have to, like, look it up again to see, like, I guess it was found in his possessions, a Jupiter talisman that is right out of Agrippa's Books of Occult Philosophy. It's in the section on celestial magic. He talks about the instructions for making the Jupiter talisman, and it's the same one that Joseph Smith is said to have possessed.
I can tell you this, and I'll go on record with saying I think Joseph Smith was a holy man. I really do. And we'll just leave it at that, and we will do some more research. You and I can jointly do some research. I think this would be a great thing for us to research, don't you?
Right.
I mean, I think it'd be great.
Yeah,
I mean,
I'm into learning about all sorts of different religions.
This is what we're about. Oh, and I've got a story that links the Baha'i faith, the fastest growing faith in the world, which is like the Muslim version of Christians, with the Mormons. And I heard about it a long, long time ago from a very devout Baha'i member, and I will write it down so that you can see it, and we will discuss this. We'll get someone from the Mormon Church, and we'll get someone from the Baha'i faith, and we'll see what they say, because, again, Sorcerer's Dictionary is about tackling difficult questions and difficult problems. Otherwise, why are we here, right?
Right. Absolutely.
So please continue with Seer, Sage, and Sorcerer Agrippa, because you've been doing you've been doing a wonderful job.
Well, thanks, John. Where were we at? I'm talking about the threefold world. That's right. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I got you off track, but I was just so excited with what you were saying. I had to say these things. Okay, please go ahead, kind sir.
Oh, you're good. I can find my place again. We're just talking about the threefold world. That's how he structured his book, was in order from the natural world through the celestial world to the divine world. And what's something interesting, it's in chapter 1, when he first talks, gives the introduction to the three books, he says something about these three worlds. He says, "Wise men do not find it irrational that we can rise by these same degrees through each world toward the same archetypal world, the maker of all and the first cause from which everything exists and all proceeds." So he's saying we can rise in our consciousness, in our understanding, and utilize things from all the worlds and connect to the divine through this philosophy. That was his view on it. And he even goes so far as to say in the next chapter regarding these three worlds and magic, he says that, therefore, whoever means to study these faculties, the faculties of magic and its uses, if they are not educated in natural philosophy, in which the qualities of things are declared, and in which one can reveal hidden qualities of anything that exists, and if they are not a worker in mathematics and in the aspects and figures of the stars, from which anything with a sublime virtue and quality depends, and if they are not skilled in theology, where immaterial substances are shown, which all are dispensed and administered, they cannot understand the rationale of magic. So,
now, you said something. Now, you said something that is near and dear to my heart. You talked about understanding the movements of the stars, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Now, in my opinion, in my humble opinion, that has to do with astrology. Because until about 1800, the only science of the universe and the planets and everything was astrology. Now, it's real funny that we've forgotten that. We've forgotten these major ways that the stars and the planets work. But they do matter. The fact that Jupiter is gigantic, and it really can have the pattern of Jupiter moving around can have an effect on man. Same thing with Saturn, same thing with Mars, same thing with Venus. So these patterns of how they move have an enormous effect on mankind. And even if you look at it, and I love telling this story, if you'll let me, I got to tell, this is one of my favorite stories. Okay, Jason, you've heard of the Farmer's Almanac, right?
Do what now?
You've heard of the Farmer's Almanac, right?
So, yeah.
Okay. Well, those predictions of weather are based on astrology. Did you know that? The entire But the entire Farmer's Almanac, something that people have used for years all over the country and all over the world, it's based on astrology. not based on anything else. That's how they get, you know, predictions about this weather and that weather, and they turn out to be usually right. It's kind of like scary. And that's what's brilliant about the Farmer's Almanac, and that's what's brilliant about astrology, because it works. Now, current day scientists who are funded by the National Science Foundation, they don't want to hear anything about that. They want to keep their jobs and get grant money. But anybody that really understands how it works, the Farmer's Almanac is based on pure old astrology, and I think that's wonderful. So, again, that's another topic that, you know, we'll find someone that can talk to us about that, and I think it'll be brilliant. I mean, these are the things that we need to bring out in the Sorcerer's Dictionary, because the Sorcerer's Dictionary is nothing but science from an earlier age. Do you agree with that?
Or as Agrippa put it, the highest and most sacred science.
That's right. And nobody needs to be scared of science. Nobody needs to be scared of any of this. What they need to do is they need to learn it. And they need to, you know, I'm sorry, they can spend all their time watching Let's Make a Deal or whatever. They need to spend their time learning what we're talking about. Now, I'll really be quiet, and I'll turn it back over to you, because I think people need to work harder at learning the real sciences.
I agree. That's really good. Yeah, I have a good fair amount of ideas about astrology. Now, I'll say this. You know, a lot of people like to come up with, like, theories as to why that worked. I mean, and some of them may have validity to them or not, but, you know, I don't know the exact mechanism behind. It would be something I would like to know, but I don't, at the current moment in time, I don't know the exact mechanism. You know, it can be shown by experience that, yes, there is something to it, you know, but the exact mechanism of why it, in my mind, is unknown. And that's what occultism is all about, because that's what occult means, is secret or hidden. It's something we just don't know. And I think that really, when you break down all of science, it's all occultism. All, well, they don't want to hear that, but it's all occultism, because you're seeking to figure out what is unknown and make it known. It is the study of occultism, studying things that are hidden from us so that we may know them.
According to North Carolina State University, where I graduated with my doctorate, that is called research. And that is what we need to be doing. Do you agree with that? That it's nothing but research.
Research?
That is correct. We need to be doing real research and understanding what is going on. That's what I think.
Right.
I hope I didn't make you mad. I'm telling you, we got to do research.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of like just the point I was getting at, was that it's occultism in nature, because the research is how you learn, doing the research, doing the experiments, testing things, doing more research, coming up with new ideas. It's all modern-day occultism, because the stuff is unknown until you research it.
Okay, so today's definition is modern-day occultism, and the definition of that is research. Do you agree with that?
Interesting. I think that's a little bit oversimplified, but I agree with the concept.
I know. I'm sorry. I'm the guy that gets oversimplistic about things, but you at least don't hate the idea, do you?
No. No, I get where you're coming from with it.
All right. Well, that's good. Well, all I've got to say is this has been, as usual, one of our most – I mean, our discussions just keep getting better and better and better, and it's just a privilege to have you on the show. And I do my best to keep up with you, because you do so much research. I'm you know, just so that everybody knows, you are a sorcerer and you do research in that. I'm a psychic and a medium, and I work in that, and I think you and I together can put on some of the greatest ideas ever. And we've had ideas for several great shows, and I think they're going to happen. So all I want to say is I just wanted to ask you something. Were you happy with this show? I know I was. I was thrilled with it.
Oh, yeah. I think it was really good.
Well, thank you. And I wanted to thank everybody who listened to this show and who will listen to this show as a podcast. We really love you. We really care about what we do. You know what? You've got two guys that really care about what we talk about. So I want to say thank you to everybody that has listened to this show. And we'll be back next week. Jason, you be back next week? I know I will.
Absolutely.
Great. Well, look, thanks a lot. Thanks to everybody that was on here. And we'll see you next week on the Sorcerer's Dictionary. Take care, everybody.